Hello, and welcome to Wellness Wednesday weekly podcast. This is your host, Damaris Luz Mercado. And today we'll be talking about COVID-19, the catalyst that launched this initiative. Oh, this pandemic has shaken up the world and everyday life as we've known it. And a little over a year ago, drastic halts and shifts brought on immediate lifestyle changes that have launched us into a new way of being. Some of it welcomed, some of it rebuked by others, and we've seen the toll that this virus has brought to the globe. Wherever you stand in your beliefs, we all have one thing in common, and that is navigating the present and the future as the coronavirus appears to be losing its novel prefix and become something we continue to deal with. So in this episode, we are going to discuss some info about COVID-19 and variant concerns, the famous antibody cocktail that was given to former President Trump, the vaccines and their makeup. We also have a few questions and concerns that came in from our Wellness Wednesday weekly community that we'll be addressing. And the goal is to educate and clarify things we've read, seen, or heard in the news. So just to let you guys know that I speak for the pro-vaxxers, the anti-vaxxers, the skeptics, and those on the fence. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that my position for this convo is neutral. For this conversation today with me is our guest, Roger Bhattacharya, who works at a pretty well-known biotech company based out of Westchester, New York. And I must say, in full disclosure, we have known each other for many moons since elementary school. And I will let him introduce himself further. Roger, welcome and thank you for being here.
Damaris, thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here with you. And I'm glad that we've had a chance to connect. And obviously, your audience, they have a lot of questions related to COVID. I'm not going to claim to know all the questions because I don't. I'm certainly here to help educate and inform. But yes, I live here in Westchester County. Work for a biotech company known as Regeneron. You may have heard of them in the news, particularly during the time when Trump got his antibody cocktail. So we can certainly talk about that more.
Yes. We definitely have to talk about that. Okay. thank you. Like I said, thank you once again for being here. I want to add a disclaimer before we continue. That as of the date of this recording, things we will discuss during this podcast may change by the time you, the listener, are listening to this episode. And we are not liable for any information, opinions, facts, or anything that you hear. We're just bringing this information to you to help inform you, educate you, and entertain your thoughts, right? So it is up to you to investigate further and make decisions for yourself. And I don't know, anything else I'm missing in there, Roger, you feel I should add to the disclaimer?
No, I think you're spot on. I think the thing that people should keep in mind that the science is moving at a very rapid pace. As we learn more, we know more, and that there's more information that's out there. We're still only about a year into this, so you're spot on.
No, the fact that you said only just gets to me. But I guess with all that being said, let's just get talking, right? So what is COVID-19? You sent me a video that I'd love to share with people, and I'll put that on the website so they can see that. But just briefly, like, what is COVID-19?
Yeah, so COVID-19, COVID, it stands for the CO part of the COVID is obviously corona, and then the V is the virus. The I is virus and the D is disease, right? So it's the coronavirus disease. And the 19 2019 is when it was first detected. Mm-hmm. The COVID-19 virus itself, let's talk about this in terms of what this is. It's a coronavirus, and there are different variations of coronavirus that are out there. There are coronaviruses that have been known. If we think back a few years ago, we had something called SARS that actually came from the Far East, and it made its way into Canada, and it never became a big epidemic. And it was a very different strain of a coronavirus, right? It behaved differently, but again, SARS is a coronavirus, which stands for severe acute respiratory syndrome. There is also another one called MERS, which is also another coronavirus, is Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. They're variations of each other, right? Viruses just live amongst the natural biological population. Now I say natural biological because it's not just humans, it's amongst animals too.
So let me ask you. So I just feel like we could talk about this for a long time. And I know that there's been a lot of information out there regarding COVID and exactly what it is. And I just feel like we could talk about the natural environments and go really deep into this. And I guess maybe for the sake of time, this COVID, like when you're talking about it, like how is it affecting us, right, as humans on our bodies and you know, just a little bit on the depth of that and really the intense disease that it is that we are dealing with.
Yeah. So this is this as a virus itself, you think about all the pictures and the images you've seen where it actually has a spike to it. This is a virus that, that once it gets into your body, and typical point of entry is through your nose. As it gets in, there's an area of your nose that actually is very rich in what's called ACE2 receptors. So if you think about it like a lock and key sort of model, think about the spike as being the key, right? And then think about the, some of the cells that are in your nose that have what's called ACE2. These spikes fit right in, almost like lock and key, right into those. And what happens is the virus itself, it attaches itself to that cell. It injects in their genetic material that'll send straight to the nucleus of your cell and start to reproduce. And it'll actually hijack that cell to reproduce multiple other coronaviruses of copies of itself. And as it does that, as you think about it, it incubates inside that cell, destroys that cell, and that cell pretty much dies. And so it starts to move on within the virus. So it'll go up into your nose, up into your olfactory glands, which is where the sense of taste and smell happen. And this virus literally will take over and it'll start to get in there and incubate. That's the place where it's going to spend its time incubating, which is why you'll be asymptomatic. You're not going to feel anything right away until the time it's fully incubated. And then as soon as you've lost your taste and smell, you know that's going to be the start of one symptom and it'll cascade to the next symptom. Mm-hmm. But what it does is it goes through and attaches itself to cells. It'll go through your vascular system. Once it gets into your bloodstream, it's actually now attacking your arteries and your veins. And basically what it's doing is causing a weakness in the walls of your arteries and veins, which is why certain types of comorbidities particularly just exacerbate the condition of what coronavirus will actually create in your system. So it's important to realize that as this coronavirus it goes through your bloodstream, it'll attach itself to the arteries of your bloodstream, and it'll attack even blood cells for that matter. But it'll start to replicate itself and then literally cause things like leaky blood vessels, and hence if that starts happening in areas like your heart, your lungs, your liver, your pancreas, you could start to have organ failure. Right. So these are the things that will start to cause, but just because of especially if you happen to have any of these comorbidities or pre-existing conditions, that's likely the case. So this is what you will see a lot happening out of coronavirus as it goes and multiplies throughout your system.
Oh my God. It just sounds like a just crazy, disgusting mess that happens with our bodies. I mean, if we start to think of a variety of diseases and illnesses, but you know, this with COVID is just quite a deadly one. And like it just seems to provoke different responses in people, some mild and others so severe. And I know that I've lost a few people or known of several people to be overcome by this. So,
That's not surprising. You know, some will experience mild and some will experience severe depending on, you know, obviously your health. But, you know, keep in mind, just because you're perfectly healthy does not mean that you cannot have the bad effects of coronavirus. There are people that there are plenty of cases of people that are out there. For instance, there is an article more recently of a woman who was a swimmer, and she was very athletically fit, no pre-existing conditions, nothing. And she has had, she's considered to be what's called a long hauler. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, that means that you have coronavirus symptoms going on for months and months and months and months. And so what's happened here for her, she has what's called brain fog. And think about it, what happens is when that the coronavirus itself goes up into your olfactory, where's the next, what's the next closest place to get up to? Isn't that blood-brain barrier? Okay, so you have this blood-brain barrier that protects your brain from the rest of the body. And it keeps almost like cushion, but to support the brain to nourish it. And you get it when the coronavirus infiltrates that space there. Now, all of a sudden, it's creating this brain fog, sort of a condition. It can actually cause heart rate elevations. So these are things that people are feeling. They could be sitting down and all of a sudden their heart rate will spike up to 120, 130. Now, imagine if you had any kind of heart condition, that would be a heart attack right there. Right. So you have high cholesterol, you have hypertension, you have high blood pressure, God forbid. That just makes that even worse there. But just think about this, that you can, just because you're perfectly healthy means absolutely nothing. There are still so much to understand in terms of how this coronavirus actually does what it does. But the fact is, the people who actually get the coronavirus and they pass it on to somebody else, they become a petri dish for that coronavirus to get a little bit stronger each time. And it will start to mutate, and you'll start to see variations based upon different genetic populations, and it starts to manifest itself in, and it can get stronger, which is why viruses do mutate the way they do. But in this case here, because this is such a dangerous virus and it's just so easily spreadable, it's so contagious, that this is one that we have a war that we have to fight collectively as a human race.
I like the way you put that, war that we have to fight collectively as a human race. You know, of course, that brings me to mentioning vaccines and the antibody cocktails that, you know, we had spoken about in a prior conversation. And, you know, so as we fight this, you know, people have different views on fighting it, right? They have different views on the vaccines and taking them or not taking them, or wearing masks, or you know, doing certain things that are, I guess, proving to be effective in helping to combat this, right? The spread. But now we're dealing with variants, and a variant after another variant after another variant. And I don't know. It's like when we look at the vaccines, right? Because that's one of the answers. There's a few different vaccines, and there's the Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca. I don't know what others. I'm probably missing a few. When we look at them, how do we know what's most effective out of them, or which one to really go with? Different parts of the country or different doctors' offices are carrying different ones. And, you know, we hear about different side effects and concerns or related or non-related deaths, blood clots, things like this. So what are some things to think about regarding the vaccines?
Well, I think the thing that that people need to understand, a couple of things, is first of all, everybody's concerned about the vaccines were rushed, right? Everybody's concerned about how did we get here so quickly? How do you trust this, right? So there's two things to understand, right? If you think about, I'm going to make an analogy here. If somebody said to you 20 years ago that you will have in your hand a computer that will not only take pictures, you could send emails, you could surf the web, it will not be connected to wires. And by the way, you can probably play games on it, and it'll be an all-in-one sort of a device that you could take and stick into your pocket and carry it around with you. And it'll make your lives a lot easier and stay connected with everybody else for that matter. People would have said, yeah, right, I don't think so. And here we are 20 years later. Guess what we've got in our hands? We've got smartphones in our hands that do all of those things. The same thing as technology has changed too, right? From a science standpoint, we're technology has changed now to a point where we have machines that could decode a gene from a virus within minutes, and be able to have scientists be able to study what parts of those genes in that particular virus could potentially prone to any kind of vulnerability. So this way we can attack that virus and therefore do something with it. So that's what's called that genetic research, right? So when you think about this coronavirus, think about that spike of the virus itself. That spike protein is what it's called. That spike protein has in their genetic material, that's DNA genetic material, deoxyribonucleic acid, right? So what you need to understand about that is that now scientists have been able to find that there is a vulnerability on that in terms of the spike protein. So they're able to now take that, make a copy of just what is on that spike protein, and they're not creating a virus out of it, say, hey, this is what makes this particular virus dangerous, and this is the coding for it. And then what they call is an mRNA, which is messenger RNA. Think about that as like a recipe book that basically said, or the secret code, code book to what that virus is. And now it tells your immune system, and it trains. It says, when you see something that has a spike that enters your body, you are to do your job, immune system, and produce antibodies to go out there and attack anything that has this kind of spike on there that's going to be invading the body. And now all of a sudden your body gets that. And that's what these mRNA vaccines are, which are the Pfizer and the Moderna ones. And
well, the Johnson & Johnson is not an mRNA.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. That's a vector vaccine. I'll talk about that in just a second. That's the okay. Slightly different one.
Okay.
So what it's doing now, you have to get two doses of it. The first dose of it's because before we give what's called a vector vaccine, that those are inactivated viruses, right? And those are usually one-shot vaccines. But this one here is an mRNA, and your body now starts to see this messaging and says, oh, okay, well, now that I have this, this will be foreign. This will tell me immediately this is foreign. And now all of a sudden your body starts to produce antibodies. And these antibodies are actually, think about them, they're like soldiers in your system that literally are on the lookout for something that's intentionally foreign. Because once the coronavirus comes into your body, it takes over, and your antibodies aren't going to be enough to produce it to stave off all the effects in time. Mm-hmm. That disease state, it's not going to be produced all in time. So right. It'll be overwhelmed. Whereas once you actually have the antibodies, anytime that that coronavirus comes in to overwhelm your system, the antibodies are there to take it on. So think of the army being preformed before the invaders come in. And that's what the coronavirus is. That's what this mRNA is actually doing, giving you that message to do so. So the first one, it's giving the mRNA. Second one is that second booster that's going to bring that up to a highest level of efficacy. And what they found based upon Pfizer's and Moderna studies, they're roughly about 94-95% effective. Mm-hmm. So that's what's important about the mRNA. And there's the Johnson & Johnson one, which uses what's the vector vaccine. It's you know, think about like, you know, the way that you get a flu vaccine, that these are inactive viruses. They're not viruses that could do anything, because they're just kind of like, they're more or less dead, but all the genetic material and information is there. And the Johnson & Johnson is like that. It's like a pretty much like a dead virus. And your body is now seeing this as this is a virus, but it's now starting to react and saying, okay, we're going to attack this. And by the way, we're going to create things that look like this. Now it's going to look at that particular type of virus and start to say, start to look at it. How do we best attack the coronavirus? Now that has a, that has a roughly about a 72% efficacy. You think about like the flu vaccines, those are much lower efficacy relative to some of the others. And it's not to say that don't take the flu vaccine, because you want to have some protection of that, and your body needs to know that, hey, what do we need to do when a virus comes into our system? Some people can fight it off and others cannot, right? But in this case here, the coronavirus, as virulent as it is and as lethal as it is, it's very important that you understand the mRNA vaccine is literally, think about it as like, that's giving your system the code to do what it does. There is so much false information out there. People think it's going to change my DNA. It's going to cause some sort of effect. It's not changing anything. If anything, that's going to, the virus itself is coming into your body and it's injecting its own DNA into cells and attacking it and producing other viruses. You would rather have something that arms your body to say, hey, as soon as you see this, go attack it and kill it, because now you'll actually have the ability to be able to fight off and destroy this virus. We could also talk about the COVID antibody cocktail too, which is a completely different thing in and of itself.
Right. But before we go into that, I mean, there are, because it's so new, I get the concern about long-term effects, right? Or that are unknown, of course, at this time. And general concerns that people have about vaccines, right, in general, whether it's regarding cancers or other illnesses that it is believed that vaccines cause or contribute to, and especially in autism communities, right? So
there isn't actually any proof that vaccines cause autism. There isn't any scientific proof to back that claim up. There are people who believe that, but there's plenty of variables that are being looked at in terms of the causes related to autism. But as far as vaccines are concerned, vaccines have been around for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. And that would mean that if anything, that there would be a lot more autism than what we have today, if that was the case, because a lot of us have been vaccinated and immunized. Mm-hmm. So there could be other environmental causes of that, which I think that still needs to be researched. So I wouldn't tie that into autism, but certainly I can understand other concerns and fears.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm just the messenger, you know what I'm saying? I'm just... putting it out there from different conversations I've had from people, or, you know, different things that I've heard. And so, another concern that's come up in conversations is around boosters, or the need for boosters annually, like the flu vaccine, right? And let's say with Moderna, right? It only lasts maybe 6 months and now you got to take a booster. So is this going to be the type of thing where every year you're going to have to get another shot, like the flu shot, the COVID shot, right?
Yeah. So the answer to that is it's still not known. And the reason why it was 6 months, think about when the actual vaccine has actually been authorized. When did that start? It started very late last year. So what they're saying is 6 months into this, we are seeing on average that this vaccine is still very efficacious at this point. It could be a year later and they could say a year into this, we're still seeing the vaccine is efficacious at least for a year. If they see at the end of a year that it's becoming less efficacious, they're going, obviously with the mRNA vaccines, those could be adapted and changed very, very quickly to adapt to variations, to adapt to whatever. conditions that are there. So that's the good news in all of that. So if we do need it again, at least now we have technologies and we have the capacity now to be able to change and affect that. Just the way the flu itself is, it's a little bit more of a guess as to what it might be like. Now the scientists are actually studying down to the genetic detail of what's out there. So you as an individual don't want to be that person in which it mutated in to pass that on to somebody else, because there's so many variations and mutations. Right now, the most prevalent one is the UK variant that's out there. And that's what's actually starting to affect younger people now.
Mm. Yeah, I got a couple of young people. I have a couple of young people in my life. I mean, not too young, but at the next stage of older than young.
Yeah, whether they're in their 20s and 30s, a lot of them will say, look, I'm young, it shouldn't affect me. And it will. I don't kid yourself.
You know, it's like COVID's coming around like, oh, I got one for you in this age group. And it's like, I got one for you in this like predisposition group, right? And it's got a different variant for each group, it seems.
COVID does not care how young you are. COVID does not care how old you are. COVID does not care how much money you have. COVID does not care what color you are. COVID does not care about anything. COVID cares about getting into your body and doing the job that it does in terms of replicating itself, in terms of spreading like wildfire, and ultimately, you know, you will succumb to it if you are predisposed to it, to any kind of other illnesses that work in conjunction with COVID.
Yeah. Let me, so I have a couple questions I just want to interject really quickly. And I think one of us will also lead us into the next topic. So let's go back to the J&J vaccine. So one here says, true, false, or maybe, and according to who? COVID survivors with lingering after effects like no smell, taste, fatigue, mental fog, paranoia, have had those issues cleared up after the J&J vaccine. Do you know anything about this?
Well, it's still early. I mean, the example of that swimmer that I mentioned to you, who has months of this mental fog and, you know, and breathing issues and what have you, had claimed that sometime after she had taken the Pfizer vaccine, that it's almost like she felt good as new. So there's this still early days on something like this. So this is one that I think that more research needs to be had on this one. Mm-hmm. There needs to be more information to be seen to see whether or not it was that you may have spontaneously cleared it yourself, or maybe that there was maybe the vaccine did help with that, because there may have been lingering virus in you or something that would have helped clear it up. But it's, you know, it's something that needs to be researched further.
All right. Well, okay. Research further. I got to just keep investigating, keep paying attention to the news, you know, keeping up with as much as we can.
Absolutely. I mean,
safe along the way. So
yeah, pay attention to the experts, right? The experts that are looking into this, because it's important. This is probably one of the biggest threats to humanity that is in front of us today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look for anything that seems a little bit on the fringe, you're going to find it. And some people will read it and believe that that's true. So you want to try to look at a variety of different sources and make decisions for yourself.
Yeah. Got to figure out what works best for you. Okay. So this other question I have, it's actually a multi-question question. I'm going to save one of the questions within it for right after, because it'll lead us into the next part. So if you have had COVID, why would you need a vaccine? If you have antibodies of the virus, why would you need a vaccine? The long haulers should be vaccinated even though they have, let me repeat that. Should the long haulers be vaccinated even though they still have symptoms from COVID? There you go.
Okay. So, I'm hoping I do.
Well, basically, if you had COVID, would you need the vaccine? Right.
So the answer is you what you should do is after you've had COVID, you will have produced antibodies. Okay. And if you've gotten over it, you have the antibodies, what you want to do is get to your doctor and have, they can do a simple antibody test. They'll draw your blood, send it to a lab and check to see for presence of antibodies. There are people that have antibodies for up to about 90 days. Some have antibodies for up to about 4 months.
But if you have antibodies, do you still need the vaccine?
Well, you shouldn't be getting the vaccine while you have the antibodies. So if the antibodies, you have to check your antibody level. So you want to check that 3 months, 6 months out and see where you are. If your antibody level has gone down, you're going to need to speak to your doctor and obviously make the determination at that point based upon your antibody level about getting the vaccine.
And so if you're a long hauler, should you get vaccinated?
You should. If you're a long hauler, does not necessarily mean that you have antibodies that are going to do you justice, right? Mm. This is something that you should talk to your doctor about because obviously your symptoms may vary. You should certainly attempt to have the conversation with your doctor about the antibodies that whether or not you have them still. What your antibody level is like. So if you're a long hauler, you're still feeling symptoms because you have like something that's like a brain fog and maybe your antibody levels could be low still or whatever. Have that checked out. You don't want to jump to any conclusion without having some data on yourself. So go get the antibody test. Even if you're a long hauler, see what your antibody level is. And if your antibody levels are low, you talk to your doctor make the prescription in terms of, hey, go get it. Get the vaccine. Cause I don't believe a lot of doctor's offices have it just yet. Mm. So, I would, recommend that, you first get data on yourself first before you say, hey, now that I've gotten over it, I don't need to get a COVID vaccine. You need to find out data on yourself. Get data about your antibody level 3 months after, 6 months after. If your antibody levels are still high, you may not need the vaccine. You may be able to fight it yourself, but you need to get the data.
You got to just put the good fight. You know what I'm saying? This COVID is definitely a fight. If it's like dodging a bullet here and there. Another last part of this question is what is the cocktail, this famous antibody cocktail that was made by Regeneron, right? That former President Trump took. Like, what was it? What is it? You know, and just for gossip's sake, like, what was his true condition? Just wondering.
So, I could tell you that at the time when President Trump was brought into the office, there's a lot of murkiness in terms of actually what his real condition was or was not. Typically, if your condition's getting close to severe, in which the case where he was having breathing issues, right? So respiratory issues. Again, still the full case of what he had was not known, but he had put in a request, or his people had put in a compassionate use request for the antibody cocktail. And at the time, this was before it actually received its emergency use authorization. And this was intended to, so what this is, the antibody cocktail, what happens here, right? The antibodies are produced for you. They are produced in mice, right? So in mice's antibody, their immune system mirrors very similarly to human antibodies or human immune systems. So they are able to take the antibodies and then produce, they're able to replicate that. And so they're able to give you the antibody military that's within your own system to go fight off COVID when you aren't able to produce an antibody response or immune response to COVID. Mm-hmm. So, and these antibodies are in what the experts have said is that you'll see that it lasts somewhere in the vicinity of about 4 or 5 months, but it's not going to be a permanent solution because these are not antibodies you produce. These are antibodies produced for you. That's literally what it's doing is you think about the picture of the COVID virus itself with the spikes on it. So it's a two cocktail, as they call it, cocktail because there are two doses that are given, two separate types of doses. One literally where antibodies are produced for it and it'll attack it from one end. And then the second antibody that comes in and attacks on the other. So literally disables the virus on the other end. So it's like a dual antibody cocktail that's coming in almost like literally not allowing that virus to do pretty much anything. And so that virus it will be destroyed. So what the research has shown that the antibody cocktail will prevent 70% of the deaths. Think about it, right? If we 550,000 plus people have died from the coronavirus. And if we can prevent a lot of these deaths as people starting to become much more symptomatic and we're able to give them this antibody cocktail, we can prevent the death rate. And so this year it will destroy the virus itself. There's more studies that are being done in terms of making it more of a prophylaxis or a barrier or protection for your body. But there's more research that's going to be done on that. But keep in mind that for President Trump, by the time that he got his antibody cocktail, the antibody cocktail went and destroyed the virus within his system. And he's able to fully recuperate because he had all the pre-existing conditions. He was overweight. He had high cholesterol. He had numerous other issues that could have easily contributed to a worsening condition for himself. So, you know, and look, putting all politics and everything aside, if you think about it just from the perspective of the antibody itself, it did what it's supposed to do. Right. And so the hope is that you know, if there's anybody that needs it, you know, I strongly recommend that you go on to infusioncenter.org and you look up infusioncenter.org/infusion-resources/ COVID antibody, COVID-19 antibody treatment. You will find Infusion Center. There's lots of information out there to look at that on the Infusion Center. So I would strongly recommend to anybody who wants to learn more about that, please do. It is given through an infusion, which you go to a local center, which has these has the antibody cocktail that would be available to you. So this is just like Pfizer and Moderna is given emergency use authorization. And if you're at that point where you have contracted COVID and you're starting to be much more symptomatic, this is something that you should speak to your doctor and look into.
Wow, there was so much that you said there. That link, that URL that you mentioned, I'll make it available on the website too, so that people can make sure it's spelled correctly. We'll have a direct link for that.
Yep, I will send you the link directly for sure.
Absolutely. So just to kind of just recap or wrap this up, you had mentioned compassionate use requests. So do people need to make that request?
No, compassionate use request was before it actually got emergency use authorization.
Got it.
So
okay.
You don't need to do compassionate use per se. You need to go, you know, you talk to your doctor and say, hey, look, I'm feeling the symptoms of this. And you can talk to your doctor about putting in an emergency use authorization. So that'll put that through.
Got it.
That'll at least get you to the, it'll tell you they can have, they have some paperwork that has to be set up for the emergency use authorization. And they can help to send you to where you need to go to get the COVID antibody cocktail.
So, okay. So let's say you haven't taken the vaccine. Right. Uh-huh. And even speaking for the skeptics or the anti-vaxxers, right, not to say that I am, but the thought is, well, if I can take the antibody cocktail, then why would I need to take the vaccine? Like if I get sick and there's this vaccine that's going to help me combat this, then maybe I'll just take my chances that way and not take the vaccine. You know what I'm saying? And also on the flip side, if I take the vaccine or let's say I have taken the vaccine, if I get sick, because you can still get sick with the vaccine, would I need to do this antibody cocktail? Would it get that bad? I mean, the vaccine is understood that it's supposed to prevent you getting that bad, probably to need the cocktail, right?
Yeah. So when you get the vaccine itself, I mean, if you do come down with COVID, it's likely to be less severe because the fact is now you've got immune reaction that's happening. So anytime your body produces an immune response, that you are going to start, you won't feel completely like, you know, you're 100%. So something is going on. Mm-hmm. So in that instance there, when this virus has taken over your body or trying to take over your body and the fighting between the antibody and the virus is going on, you will feel some symptoms of it.
Not bad enough for you to have to go take
that. Not bad enough. Correct. Right. Correct. But now the antibody cocktail, keep in mind, because these are produced antibodies for you, because it could take some, from research, it could take up to about 3 weeks for your body from the time you get your vaccine to produce your own antibodies. In this here, the antibodies are in the antibody cocktail, the antibodies are produced for you and they will last in your system probably about 3-4 months, you know.
That's for the vaccines.
No, the antibody cocktail.
I'm over here getting everything confused. Sorry.
No. The antibody cocktail is where antibodies are produced for you. The vaccines are to have your own body produce your own natural antibodies.
Right.
That's your own natural antibodies from your system.
Okay,
so
wait.
The antibody cocktail is not from your system, but it's going in there to do its job.
Continue
to be produced because your body's not seeing that, hey, how do I produce this? Rather, something's come in to produce it. It's like you brought in, like, it's almost like you brought in like a SWAT team from somewhere on the outside to come do the job, and the SWAT team is done and leaves, but you haven't trained the soldiers in that local area how to go fight it should there be another instance of it.
You know, like that's reflective of many parts of the country and the world, but we're not going to even get into that. Anyhow, so going back to that, the first part of that where I mentioned like the skeptics or the anti-vaxxers who might think if I get COVID, I could just take this antibody cocktail. So why do I need to take the vaccine?
I mean, the antibody cocktail is there for when you have any kind of an emergency. I don't know about you, but I would rather have my own body be trained to know how to take on the invaders that come into my body than have to continuously rely on having antibodies produced for my system. And then, you know, if after 4 months, the antibodies are no longer there because they're not my own antibodies, then if there's another invasion in there, mm-hmm. I have to go run back and try to get there. So let's just say you're on vacation somewhere. You're on vacation 2 weeks somewhere, and you had come down with COVID. You're not going to suddenly go fly back to your infusion center. You might be too sick, or you might be too contagious to get onto a plane and fly. Mm. So you would rather be in a position where you have your own antibody, let's call it antibody military, ready to go to battle should that time come to be to go to battle. That's what you'd rather do. That cocktail is there should your symptoms become worse and you don't have and your system just can't mount an immune response.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I mean, this conversation has definitely brought up some more things to research further, and I definitely think it's brought some clarity for some folks who've been listening in, right, and gotten some answers and maybe made some decisions during this time of what they're going to do, right, with regards to themselves or how they're going to move forward. And I definitely want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for giving of your time to provide some information for us. And I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to add in or make sure that people are aware of before we wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I encourage your listeners and anybody to do is obviously, you know, don't don't make decisions without information and data. Always consult with your doctor. Always make sure that you have all of the information, not just a part of a story you read on Facebook. I will tell you that Facebook and social media is littered with information that is false, information that's half true, and some information that's truth. You need to do as much research as possible. Talk to scientists, right? That's what you need to do. Talk to people who are very much about the data and the information, and make choices that are for you. Obviously, there could be religious reasons why you won't take it. There could be, you know, perceptions in terms of why you may not take it. But if anything, keep in mind, this is not about you, right? This is not about you, the individual. It's about what you get that you may inadvertently give to somebody that you love or that you care deeply about. And that is really what this is about. This is not about how much, you know, you are against something or you are for something. This is how much you are about not giving a deadly virus to others within your family and social circles.
I love the way you said all that. That's beautiful, you know, and I thank you for that last bit of the message, especially. And thank you to each of you listeners for hanging with us through this conversation. And remember, it's up to you to do your part to keep yourself and loved ones safe and healthy. So please do the right things. Once again, this is Damaris Luz Mercado, your host of this Wellness Wednesday weekly podcast. Check out our site and join our community at wellnesswednesdayweekly.com.